save balls.
They did.
I didn't read that until just now. We save balls. Manscaped Daily News.
Ask me why I'm reading my newspaper.
Why are you reading your balls newspaper?
Well done.
Oh, hang on.
Today's episode is brought to you by Manscaped.
Is it really? Yeah.
It is. Manscaped are changing the game when it comes to male grooming above and below the waist.
And also, if you can't find your keyhole in the dark...
There's some new features. There is some new features.
I love it. And the t-shirt as well.
Performance package they've put together is pretty cool, isn't it?
I had a little trim. You know what? I'm getting like a patch of grey hair that's just kind of sweeping along, like along here. And although it looks kind of cool, it looks weird because you don't have many grey hairs, do you?
No. Blonde and ginger, mainly.
Well,
I don't have many hairs in general, to be honest. So it's a bit of a touchy subject.
I don't know what it is, but grey whiskers look twice as long as dark whiskers.
Right.
So I have to like keep finding them and like trimming them into place. I do love this.
It's very good.
Yeah.
High powered, light on it, ceramic blade.
The light's a good touch.
And most importantly, they have now launched in the UK. It probably does work.
Actually took some plastic.
If you guys would like to get on the Manscaped train, we have a code for you. If you drop Full Reptile in at the checkout, you will get 20% and you will get free shipping on the new Manscaped range in the UK. And it's good, isn't it?
And you don't just have to shave your balls with it.
You don't just have to shave your balls. You can. Safely shave your balls if you want to.
In the dark, because the light's on them.
But you don't have to.
I don't put a light on it.
At least they've thought about it, you know what I mean? Like, there's some R&D gone into it.
I have a weird dip on the backside of my head, and as you know, I've done a lot of mohawk shaving in hotel rooms, like when I've been on the road. So to have something like that, to like get into that groove in the back of my head.
Scoop
like,
out the groove.
There you go.
There's a fair few dents in my own head. There we go.
Banging against that radiator.
Yeah, let me move forward a touch.
Upset the people that have got the noise cancelling headphones on.
All good.
What are we going to talk about? Well, we've got
a couple of things in it.
We've got Bellator to talk about because there was some great fights on that. But I want to talk about Brave first. You've not watched it yet, have you?
No, I haven't caught it yet. I will catch up on it, but it was a good event by all accounts.
It was a great event. It was. Not only were the fights good, competitive, well matched, but like the environment as well. It was like there was this like big metal structure with the lighting rig on it, and it was outside this old fort.
In what country?
Bahrain.
Yeah,
And like all the fighters walked out from the fort and into the cage. There was one guy on it. Let me get his name right.
I like a bit of theater. I like a bit of theater. It must remind you of the Pride Theater. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a little bit of. You know,
I think it works, especially now there's a lot of events happening like in, you know, during a pandemic where you can't have a big crowd there. Like it allows you to do other stuff. I mean, I think Karate Combat are doing interesting stuff with like their green screen studio.
Yeah, very cool.
Where it looks like a video game. But like to do outdoor events, is it Matchroom are doing outdoor boxing events as well? Like outside Eddie Hearn's backyard. They've set up like a big lighting.
I think Eddie Hearn's backyard would be significant. There's probably enough space to do an event there.
It's big enough to hold a Woodstock, let's put it that way. But yeah, it was a good event. There was some good finishes on it. Carl Booth won.
Yep.
Nottingham lad boy. Carl Booth. Brad Katona.
Carl Booth's been around for a while now.
He has been around a long while. Because he was like, as Roughhouse was kind of peaking, he was like starting to come into the sparring sessions and stuff, wasn't he? But like small circles in Nottingham, though, isn't it? You always end up working with the same coaches. I think he's working with, well, he had Tolly in his corner, Tolly Plested, jiu-jitsu coach at UFC Gym Knots. I think he's been working a bit with Owen as well, Comrie.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Always a good striking coach. Brad Katona did really well with John Kavanagh in his corner, guillotine in the third. And then there was the Marcel Grabinski fight against Issa Isakov was another good fight. I'm learning these new names because obviously there's a bunch of new guys in here I'm watching out for, but really good. And that flyweight tournament, I mean, three of the four guys were UFC flyweights and were released when they were starting to...
I mean, we looked through that roster the other week, didn't we? And it's like it's a very, very good roster, isn't it? There's a high standard of guys on that roster. It should be a good... Certainly a good future for Brave. I think they're up and coming promotion, aren't they?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm going to try and get out to one of their events when things open back up again.
Yeah.
Okay, Bellator.
Yeah. I mean, first of all,
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, I really enjoyed jumping on BBC iPlayer the day after and being able to watch it.
It feels
very cool.
It feels comfortably legit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That it's like, oh,
it's the BBC, young man.
Sit down and watch the BBC, Bellator on the BBC.
Ah, it was great. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, I enjoyed the card and I enjoyed being able to jump on iPlayer and watch it.
Yeah.
Big move for Bellator, I think that is.
Big move.
Big move over here.
Big move.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there were some good matchups anyway. I was interested to see what Usman and Magomedov looked like. Pitbull is, he's very, very good.
He's very good, isn't he?
He's very good. And I was interested because the first fight again with Emmanuel Sanchez was competitive. You know, there was Sanchez caught Pitbull with one of those shots kind of around the ear.
Yeah.
That doesn't knock you out, but it just switches your lower body off.
Band's gone.
Yeah, and it was a competitive fight, but then this time around it was...
Beautiful time, left hook, right.
Yeah.
And then left hook did the damage and squeezed him to death.
Mm.
Yeah, very good. He's...
How do you see him competing with other featherweights, like UFC featherweights?
Well...
Can you see it?
I mean, the reference point is obviously Mike Chandler, right?
Yeah.
So if you've got that as your level finder, he must go in pretty good.
I think so. I'd be interested to see him mix it up.
I wonder how he'd go with like the top level strikers, particularly in that
yeah
weight class.
I mean, if you're looking at fights that would be interesting, someone like a Barbosa or a Jeremy Stevens, someone that's been around that we know.
Yeah,
I'd like to see him in there against. But I mean, there's other rising guy. I mean, AJ McKee is very good anyway. And obviously, that's the next fight. But
that's for £1 million, isn't it? A million dollars. Yeah. $1 million.
$1 million.
Prize fight.
Love it. I love it.
Love it.
I like it. They should hang it in a bag above the cage while the fights are happening.
Yeah, or explode it out of a cannon at the end.
Bring a ladder in for the winner to go and get it.
Yeah, no, he's very good, wasn't he?
What about Jeremy Jackson?
Oh, man.
And he's...
To be honest, that eye scrape down the fence, when you saw it in slow mo, you could literally see his eye jolt off each one of the cage squares. Yeah. That was not very nice. But you see the cut at the end.
Yeah,
it would feel like your eyeball was falling out, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Yeah, it would just make you nervous about taking more shots on it as well. Like of all things, there are two things: your brain and your eyes. They're the two things, really. Yeah. I mean, you can have teeth replaced and your nose can be all
tough out. You can't tough that out, can you?
Can't, no.
No, it's funny. It wasn't funny at all. But when it happened, it like pauses people, doesn't it? Like he just paused.
Yeah.
And then obviously Newman took advantage of that.
It was super quick with that underhook, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the fight in itself wasn't necessarily a standout, was it?
I've only watched it once.
Yeah, relatively close. No, I only watched it
once.
How
did you score it?
Did
you have it for Jackson?
Just, but it was, you know, it was close enough that you could probably make an argument either way, control and damage and, you know. I thought he probably just about edged it. The problem is I just, not necessarily from a judge's point of view, but from a personal bias, just controlling's like, you're not going to get that off me.
Mm.
Yeah. Just controlling people, you know, you're not going to get the win off me. But
it's interesting that since the scoring criteria has changed, that the judges have swayed like a lot heavier towards grappling. I mean, I watched UFC 35, I think it was, because it was at the Mohegan Sun, which is where the Raptors have been on the weekend. And I messaged Mystery, and I was like, this is an iconic place. Like the Mohegan Sun is an iconic arena. Like there were a lot of early UFC events that were held there and stuff. And so I went back and watched that first event. And like even the way it's listed in the scoring back then is, you know, effective striking, grappling, followed by aggression and octagon control. I mean, it was always weighted in that direction. But in those old days, people would play more towards grab a takedown, hold the fight to the floor, you know, beat him up a little bit. And that
it was so dominant, wasn't it? Like the sport didn't have answers for that at all. And I know sometimes you have fights now where, you know, guys are just outmatched and they can't get off the back no matter, you know, and you would think they should have answers to that by now. But, you know, that's wrestling. That's why wrestling is the core sport for everything to work off, really, isn't it?
It's still the glue though, isn't it?
Yeah,
like the only thing you can weaponize about wrestling is the fatigue element.
Yeah, I'm not going to interrupt you. Carry on with what you're saying because I'm getting some heat about this again.
I always feel like I'm interrupting you though, which doesn't make any sense.
I think this is how people have conversations, right? Is you're always sort of maybe half interrupting each other.
Maybe you're just supposed to sit there and listen to me talk.
Like I say, you've got a monologue show.
I mean, I know there are people that are going to disagree with me, like people that are in wrestling that are like, oh no, wrestling has its submissions, etc., etc. But like the sport of wrestling, it doesn't. I mean, it's about control.
Mm.
And like one of my favorite documentaries, I used to watch it all the time in training camp, was Competitor Supreme about Dan Gable. And that whole thing was just work so hard that they can't keep up.
Yeah.
Like work them off the mat. And that's the part you weaponize about it. You still need it's a precursor to a finish.
I definitely think I've watched a couple recently where people have started weaponizing wrestling fatigue. Like they'll feel like they're being outstruck. They'll take them to the fence and they'll build some fatigue into them. And then by the time they come back out, everything's just leveled up a little bit because you just can't execute at the same speed.
But it's there were fights like back in MMA history that like that happened in a fight, and now that fight signifies that tactic.
Mm.
So, like when you say that to me, my first thought is GSP against BJ Penn 2,
right?
Because the first time he got lit up, like his face was a bloody mess at the end of that first round, and it was down to sheer determination and conditioning that got him through the next two rounds and was able to get the win. The second time around, it was like, I'm not letting you do that again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not standing at boxing range.
Have some of this wrestling fatigue.
And like, by the time BJ was at the end of that first round, it was just done.
Yeah.
Just done.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a smart play. What will be, obviously, neither of us have been in American collegiate programs, but it would be interesting to see what the dropout rate, like who, you know, by the time you've got your wrestling team, what was the dropout rate from what you started from? You know, you had 500 people wanting to do wrestling and you end up with 15. Mm. Like those 15 of, you know, they're super durable and they have a mental and physical tolerance for just work that you probably couldn't train that into people. It's more like the strongest survive in those sort of programs. And like the stories you hear of those programs, like not many are surviving that.
No.
If you get that singlet, you earn that singlet.
Yeah, and things are much nicer now, from what I understand, than they were back in the Dan Gable days.
No doubt.
You know.
No doubt.
I thoroughly enjoyed that documentary. If you've not watched Competitor Supreme, go and check it out, because it's just like he's molding these monsters, and when they go to a tournament, there's no doubt every single one of them is going to lose.
There's a little bit of a arrogance about wrestlers in MMA, isn't there? Like, you know, they know they can compete.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing, you can't throw anything at us that I haven't worked through because I know how to compete.
But the thing is, like when you're good at manhandling somebody that's your size, you know, when you can, I know this is a bit of a weird tangent, but it was like, I was watching this, the pirate documentary that's just been added onto Netflix.
Started watching it.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really good.
You know, when they were talking about, I can't remember the dude's name now, that like the pirate that was a bully, like he was so brutal that he was able, he figured out how to make people do what he wanted.
Yeah.
And he just ruled the show because of that.
I can't remember his name in time.
No, I can't remember his name.
I can see his face now off that thing. So that documentary is the same, well, it's the same story as Black Sails.
It is.
It's exactly the same.
I said that to
and
V
all
yesterday.
The references are the same because obviously they're telling the same story, but it's done in almost like a documentary form.
Yeah.
It's worth a watch.
Yeah.
Good.
I watched really the first two episodes. I enjoyed it. But it's like just that mentality of, I walk into a place and I'm so confident because I know I can make people do what I want. It's like Ben Askren said to Jake Paul, and it was a weird way of saying it. It was a really weird. He was like, "What did he say? Do a homicide?
Yeah.
Do you do a homicide?
Yeah, but Jake knows that I can do a homicide on him.
that's the least ghetto way of talking possible.
I do get what you mean. Yeah.
That's a white guy and with I mean, a perm is, kind know, of way of saying it.
It is true. The rules of boxing are going to protect Jake.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Very much so.
Exactly. Because, like, no matter how good Jake Paul is at boxing, if it was a fight, Ben Askren would be able to manhandle him to a point where he'd be so tired he wouldn't be able to stop Ben Askren beating him up.
No, and I mean, I can't imagine Jake's been thrown on his head recently. He's not going to know what that feels like to be inverted and and driven into the floor. So,
yeah.
But it's, I mean, you go. No, honestly, you go.
But it's like that confidence, though, of like you stand and you look at someone, you're like, I can just manhandle you.
But I always feel that you guys with Elite Striker must feel like that. It'd be like, any fight, all I need is, you know, one. I know what these can do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we probably do. But then, like, you know, in a grappling sense, like, you know, we've been fortunate enough to roll with some amazing grapplers, and you feel that when you roll. Like, Paul Barton said it the other week. He was talking about rolling with Dan Strauss. And he said, he was like, at the end of it, I just kind of asked myself whether we're doing the same thing. How is it that you know the same things that I know, but I can't compete with what you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said it to you before. It's like someone shouting you in fluent Japanese. You're just like, what? I recognize a little bit of what you're saying to me, but that's about it.
Yeah,
that's just level. Just, you know, it's an overused term now, isn't it? There's levels to this game, but there is just levels to everything.
For sure. Did you watch the heavyweights, Tyrell Fortune?
No.
Mate,
no.
It was between Usman Nurmagomedov Jason Jackson. Came out, hit Jeremy May with this wicked takedown and just mauled him on the floor.
Yeah.
Just mauled him on the floor. And I'm not exactly... It was a little bit like Jeremy May owed the referee money because he was curled up in a ball for a good while.
Yeah, right. I mean, I like that. I like that ability to impart that on someone, because the wrestling art has a bit of a negative connotation in some ways, in that you'll get tucked down and people just lie on you. They'll lie on that half guard and not do any real damage. But that's not the same. Mm-mm. Like the Khabib thing, like taking it out and he just maul you into submission.
Yeah.
Like you'd rather get choked than let this carry on, mm-hmm. because it's just so miserable. You can't get up. Every time you start getting up, they break you down and you get an elbowed and hammer fisted and, you know, the head's up in your chest and your chin. It's just a horrible place to be, isn't it? Mm. Like, I like that. That's a great skill to be able to impart on another human.
See, that's the bit why I don't understand. When you see someone that's a good wrestler and they just use wrestling.
Yeah.
That's the bit I don't understand, is because, like I said a bit ago, like, wrestling's a precursor to a finish. But as you know, like, if it's funny enough, V said this earlier today, and it's just jumped into my mind. I was watching a fight with two high level grapplers, and the commentator said, "Oh, we really want to see how these two match up on the floor." And V said, "If that was a grappling match, though, no one would be interested in watching it."
Yeah, right.
Right. The difference is that we've got two grapplers that can now punch each other in the face. Like, if you're up against a good grappler, you'll find yourself in positions where you're thankful they're not punching you in the face.
Yeah.
Right?
Safe zones.
So, like, if you're a grappler or a wrestler, punching someone should make it easier to control them because it makes them less
But then the flip side is, to punch them, you have to create space, which is your enemy, and grappling's in it. You're always trying to close space.
Yeah.
So to strike, you have to make space, which obviously opens up avenues out of positions, I suppose.
Which shows that you're more interested in maintaining control than you are about finding a finish.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why the judging criteria is swayed in that direction.
Yeah. But then it's like, that comparison is, it's less about grappling, it's more about who's adapted better. So you might have two great grapplers, but who's adapted this to be able to impart damage instead of purely control?
Yeah, but like, being a good grappler is kind of like having good footwork in a lot of ways.
Mm.
Like, sorry, being a good wrestler is like having good footwork. Like, the only difference is that with one aspect of control, you're in physical contact with the person, and then the other aspect of control, you're not. Which is why people don't really understand and appreciate footwork the way that they should. Like, wrestling, everyone's like, oh, okay, that's the glue of MMA. But it's still just a method of control. Like, the end result, whether it's striking or, you know, fatiguing someone to make them more vulnerable and submitting them, or just catching a submission when they're dry, like, they're the finishers. Controlling someone with wrestling is control, like controlling someone with footwork.
Mm.
If you're so good at controlling someone with footwork, you should be able to instigate a finish. If you're so good at controlling someone with wrestling, you should at least be able to work towards a finish.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Wrestling should be a conduit for a finish, right? You should be positioning yourself to inflict something that can finish the fight.
But then the problem is, like, where is that line? Because, like Neiman Gracie had a lot of good positions on Jason Jackson. Like, he had his back, had him flattened out. Like, how close to a knockdown do you score those positions?
Like, yeah, how close still, to... Like, if you've got them flattened out, you should be inflicting some damage. Like, just getting them flattened out, that's sort of missing the point.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the change in MMA. I think people are going to start to have this realization soon. And instead of getting in there, taking someone down and chasing submissions over and over again, I think they're going to start utilizing that control to do damage and fatigue the person.
And take the sub if it's there.
Yeah.
If they opt out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kano Watanabe.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We were chatting about her earlier. I trained with her in Japan.
Yeah.
And she's the single strongest female I've ever come across. Really? Yeah. Incredibly strong.
She's flyweight, 125.
Really strong at 125.
So you got like a 20-pound weight advantage on her then?
And a bit. Back then. I was in shape back then. Oh, yeah, a bit
back
more.
Then. Back then when you were in shape.
Look, I thought she looked a bit... She's a bit rudimentary with her striking. She, you know, we've said a few times she strikes... People who strike like a grappler, she clearly strikes like a grappler.
Yeah.
But
she's got some judo though.
She got a bit of judo.
Tell you what, she was backed up in the first round, early in the first round as well. Took a couple of shots and out of nowhere she went outside reap and just slammed her opponent.
She messed up a couple of trips though, which I thought was uncharacteristic of someone that had been in that sport for so long. I think she messed up a lateral hip toss. I noticed it because it was the same thing. Adesanya tried it in a different fight, and it made DC couldn't stop laughing on the commentary.
Yeah.
He was like, that's not how you do that. I love that he's got the confidence to do it, but that is not how you do that. Yeah.
But then you got to think, even in judo, there are different styles. Like coming from Taekwondo, my style wasn't the stand on the outside with my hands down and bap, 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 you know, loads and loads of kicks off the same leg.
Yeah.
Like, I'd step in with a hard kick to follow up with another hard kick. And it's like, so her style in judo might have been much more upper body control and foot sweeps and trips and less loading onto her hip. Because there were a lot of times when she was doing really well in the clinch where she was manipulating her opponent's movement with like a foot sweep or a trip, or even baiting her with one trip to get her to step and then getting her with something else.
Yeah, she got the win. I thought it was pretty close. She was getting...
Lara was good, though.
Striking was good. Yeah, yeah.
Just a little bit too aggressive.
If she managed that distance better, she'd have won that fight, wouldn't she? You can't overcommit when you've got a national representative judoka in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. Good fight. Fun card all over, really.
Well, we've not talked about Usman Nurmagomedov, have we?
Oh.
Did you watch it?
Yeah. I thought it was great. He's just...
Pretty slick, isn't he?
Stoic.
Yeah.
Efficient. Like... Almost like faceless, isn't he? He just goes about his business.
You know what's interesting is that there's like this other group that are coming, like the second generation after Khabib, have all got really good striking as well.
Yeah.
Like Usman Nurmagomedov, Abubakar. What's the other kid as well that fought the other week? He's got really good Taekwondo striking.
He doesn't even like engage the wrestle, does he? Until he has to. I can't remember his name.
Does he not train out at Mark Henry's gym though? I think he's on that coast. I think. Anyway, but there are a bunch of them from that team that are all coming through with like more traditional, like Taekwondo skills almost.
Very slick, strong.
Yeah, like southpaw, almost like very kind of European style long range boxing, but with that lead leg that they just lift up and keep snapping out.
No, he was good. He's got a nice. Counters with his kicks well, doesn't he? Like really nice. It's probably better than I'd sort of seen for a while.
Yeah.
Just sort of stood out a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, Hamill was tough, right? He was technically outmatched and he hung in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to see him progress though.
I think he's going to get better and better. He's just it's just tip of the iceberg really.
Yeah. I mean, he's tall as well, isn't he?
Mm.
Is he like 5'11"?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good event.
Yeah, very good.
Shall we get on to this weekend?
Yeah. Right. It's long. There's a lot of fights to talk about.
There are a lot of fights. I spent 2 days researching Vittori and Till for the breakdown show.
I know. I messaged you thinking, oh, I hope he's seen this because he's in the middle of doing a breakdown for
it. It was the evening of the second day of research, and I was sitting there with my iPad, like putting the clips together, sitting stretched on the floor in the gym. And V was upstairs, and she just sent me a message. She just sent me a screenshot of it. Like,
It's all in the bank.
Well, yeah, exactly. For next time, yeah. But it's
the Mate, thing. The UFC is that, didn't change it till yesterday. I don't think on their website.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it was an interesting fight, and there were a lot of good talking points on it. So I hope it does happen at some point. But this, I'm kind of not as interested in Kevin Holland as I was before the Derek Brunson fight.
Bloody more interested in him now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Just like, you know what? I think whether he likes to admit it or not, he will have seen that criticism, and he's hinted at the fact he's seen it and read about it and listened to it. And I think he can win this. I think it's set up for him to win it. I don't think Vittori is, if it stays, I find Vittori a little bit mechanical. Like, he's super athletic, and my God, he looks strong. Mm. Like, I can only imagine what his stats are in the gym, but he looks strong, thick, athletic. I better be horrible to grapple with.
He's very stiff, though.
Yeah, but he's mechanical, isn't he? He's a bit robotic in his striking.
He's very stiff. He's like, there seems to be so much tightness across his midsection. Yeah. And it's like, he throws his left, but he kind of doesn't even fully rotate his body. And you can tell how uncomfortable it is for him because he uses his right arm to like elbow back to like pull his shoulder round.
But like, sometimes I watch him, I wonder how he's done as good as he's done, because I mean he's got a good chin on him. He doesn't get hurt. He's hard to hurt, isn't he?
He is hard to hurt.
And he's super thick around his neck, and you know that muscle.
But I think maybe that lack of flexibility, there is a benefit.
He's just got
to
the stiffness,
you know,
instead,
I mean?
Yeah.
Just fucking takes it. Yeah. A bit like Vanderlei. Vanderlei was the same. He was a bit, his motion from one punch to the next was a very limited range of movement. And Vittori's the same. I do think that he's, I do think he had a much better shot with Darren Till taking him down, beating him up, working on his neck than he has with
Holland. I think this is a problem for
him.
It's
a much more difficult fight. Like, Darren Till's very good, and I would say Darren Till's striking, understanding and application's higher than Holland's, but he doesn't have the same variety. Mm. And variety can be a problem with someone like Vittori because they're quite rudimentary in everything that they do, but effective because he's tough and durable and well-conditioned.
It's almost the opposite of the last time I spoke about Kevin Holland. Is I think his unpredictability is his main thing in this fight. Because Vittori is relatively linear, he's quite single shot sometimes. He'll throw very sort of rarely, throws larger combinations. I think he's got a reasonably good jab. But I think his unpredictability is going to be his major sort of winning point on this fight. Mm. I think it's going to be tough for Vittori.
The other thing as well is I can think of times when I had a fight. Like, I remember fighting in Japan and getting disqualified for the groin kick. Calling Ian Dean up at Cage Warriors and being like, "You've got an event next week. Get me somebody on the event. I don't care who it is, anyone. But I want a winning record." And I showed up that next week feeling so much better.
Yeah.
Because, like, last week I was in this same environment, you know, and when was Kevin Holland's last fight? It was a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah, not long ago at all. I think he's got a point to prove. I think he's put himself in this...
20th.
I think he's put himself up for this fight to prove a point.
Yeah.
You heard of the sad clown paradox?
No.
It's like, it just made me... after the last time we spoke about him, I saw how he sort of behaved. I just thought... we chatted about it. I just thought there's got to be some. It seems like this is something that would be talked about in psychology. And sad clown paradox is using humor to mask your true feelings. And it made me think he was behaving the way he's behaving because it's easier for him to fail if he's behaving like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if he takes it really seriously and he fails, then he has to deal with the fact he might fail.
Yeah.
Like. I am not Dr. Ollie. This is not coming from a qualified psychologist, but I just thought it kind of made sense in a superficial manner. It sort of makes sense.
I know what you mean.
But this would be, I think this is a massive opportunity for him. And I really do think he can get a big scalp here and sort of derail Vettori a little bit.
Well, I mean, that's the thing is like Vittori's coming in with momentum and it's almost like the opportunity that he had with Brunson has almost represented itself and he can kind of run it back with someone that's maybe not quite as difficult to deal with as Brunson.
Yeah, because he's not going to have the same wrestling, is he?
No. And Vittori, I think, would have probably wanted to grapple with Till. I don't think he'll want to grapple with Holland.
No.
Purely because of the unpredictability of it. He's going to feel like he's going to be able to take his shots better and back him up and wear him down. And, obviously he was watching the Brunson fight thinking to himself, I can do this to Kevin Holland, and now he has the opportunity to do it.
If Kevin falls into that, you know he's got a good squeeze on that guillotine, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Marvin.
I mean, that's the one thing. Marvin does leave his head out a little bit. You know, he's not got the cleanest of wrestling, but he's good in top position, and he's got a bit like Stipe, because he's got that short punching power. Like, he can hit you with five or six shots in the space where somebody else would wind up and land one or two.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm almost in some way surprised he took it. I guess he didn't. I guess he just, you know, took whoever. Like, I'm in shape and ready to go. Seems like Vittori seems like he loves fighting. Like,
yeah, he does.
He'd happily fight. Just whoever's next, roll him in.
Yeah.
But I think it's a tough one. I really do think it's a tough one.
We start at the top of the card. We've gone backwards.
Well, I'd scrolled all the way down the bottom, but.
Do you want to make your pick?
It seems
for
like
this
a huge
one.
Card. I think.
You're going for Kevin Holland.
Yeah, I think Kevin Holland will come back with a bang here.
Yeah. It's a good pick. It's a good pick. I like Vittori, but I think toughness, conditioning, and durability is always limited when you get to the top five.
Mm.
And I think when you start to get into that top five, then you start to realize that there are. Like, Vittori would have felt it a little bit when he faced Adesanya. Like, Adesanya was making him bite to things that weren't.
Mate, that's his blueprint. That's Kevin's blueprint. And I think, obviously, Kevin isn't as sharp.
See, that's the thing. I don't think he has that. I don't think he has that ability on the ground, quite possibly.
Mm.
But I don't think he has the ability to program an opponent like that. I think it's the unpredictability is a benefit, but that's unpredictable for Kevin Holland as it is for his opponent.
Okay, yeah.
Like, he's not planning
it's not
the unpredictability.
Unpredictability, no. Because Marvin got picked apart by Izzy, didn't he?
Yeah.
Pretty much standing.
Comfortably.
Like, he was having his way pretty easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, now I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
And the other thing that concerned me as well is that talk of, I'm just here to have fun, I'm not really interested in being a champ. Like, now, you've put that psychological spin on it, but the fact that he was saying that after the fight, I'm like, ah, oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, are you... I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. This could be, you know, this could put... If he wins this fight, that's a huge scalp for him. Well, for both of them, really. This is a good... This puts them in a...
He's still got to move up the rankings if he wins this one, right? So where is it? So Vittori's at 6. Holland's at 3, at 10.
Yeah.
So if Holland beats Vittori, he's still moving... He's still up right behind Darren Till, effectively.
Which way would you sway if Till was still in?
I would be leaning slightly towards Till, I think.
Because similar reasons. I think he's just way too sharp on his stand-up.
I think the more I learn about Marshall, it's the old adage, the more I learn about it, the less I realise I know. It's like all of a sudden when you clear when you like get through that level, you're in that clearing, all of a sudden you realise that there's Anderson Silva's looking at your inside leg to make you think that a front kick's coming, that make you think that a low kick's coming, then he throws a front kick to the face. Like, that's a game within a game that's being played. Same thing with when he fought Forrest Griffin and he got Forrest chasing him and walked him onto a punch. Like, all of a sudden when you see that, you're like, oh, so he's not just throwing kicks and punches at one another. We were talking about, I was telling V a story yesterday about a guy called Wayne McCoy I used to train with, and he was one of Steve Papp's Thai boxers. And he had this I remember I have this clear memory of this fight, and I explained it all to V yesterday, how he was pressuring him into the corner, but not quite into the corner, because so he didn't want to smother his low kick against the ropes. So he was holding him like just outside the corner with the corner over to the side. And he managed him in this space. And any time he got out, he just put him back into that same circuit. And at the same time as that game being played with the footwork and the control, he was breaking him down with a jab. He was feinting the jab and hitting him with a left hook. He was feinting the jab, feinting the left hook, hitting him with a low kick. Mm. And then he was feinting, and knocked him out with the right hand.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this thinking to myself, he's got like three different games being played here.
Simultaneous being played.
Three different plates being spun. Yeah. And I'll watch some guys and I'm like, he knows what he's doing. And I watch other guys and I'm like, he's throwing kicks and punches.
Yeah. I love it. And like in team sports, like the quarterback is pulling all of these different strings. You know, the number 10 in rugby, they're pulling up, they're manipulating people and they're putting the ball in certain areas for reasons. And it just looks like they're kicking a ball, but they're not, because it's the fourth time they've done it. And they're trying to get a read out of the opposition. Same thing.
Yeah.
You're throwing these things out there, trying to get a read, and then, you know, acting on the result of it. Yeah, so, I agree.
You know,
that's where it's at, isn't it?
It's like if your brain plays the role of the quarterback, your low kick defense is in a team sport, it's a manifestation in a person. Like that person plays a defensive role. Mm. So like give me a defensive role in rugby.
I mean, like your defensive line, your first two guys in the defensive line defend the rock.
Right.
So you can't come in back in behind the rock. So they have to stay there. One and two stay there no matter what.
So that's
no matter
their
what
job.
You throw at me, they stay there.
That's their job.
And then the attack, throw bait at them to try and get them to step out, and you send someone through that gap.
Right.
Exactly the same, right? How many times have we said about rules of sport just cross all, you know, bait and move.
It's like, you know, go back to the American football reference, or football if you're in America.
Yeah.
Like the quarterback is managing this whole team, and he knows what his options are. So those two or three receivers are his left hook, his low kick, and his right hand. And he can play any of those narratives that he wants.
But keep throwing left hands,
they're going to see it. They're going to take that guy out, and I'm you know, disregarding my other options. But all the time that's going on, you've got this defensive line, and their sole job is to give the quarterback enough time to release the ball.
Yeah.
But each one of those people in that team is a manifestation of a defensive tactic in martial arts. So one of those guys is a low kick defense.
Yeah, I really see the analogy. I really do see the analogy. It's funny how it's like universal laws of nature, don't I mean?
Yeah.
It's like there's universal laws of sport. Now, there's nuances in all of them, but fundamentally it's still the same idea.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love it.
It's the more I listen to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, the more I start to feel this as well, because then you see how like military tactics, like you look at an army and you go, okay, well, this army is 10,000 strong, they're all Greek hoplites. So every single one of them has got the same armor, same shield, they've got a side sword and a spear. And that is your whole army.
You would think that those guys' skills would be similar. Like they're trained to do a role, and they're all of those guys that if you dress the same, you've got the same weapons, you pretty much know what you're going to get. Like they're going to do a certain thing.
Exactly.
So as a general, you're like, right, we'll put them there. That's what they're going to do. They're not going to suddenly start doing some crazy shit, because that's not what they're not trained to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly that. Because they have a characteristic as that type of soldier. So if you've got 10,000 Greek hoplites and that's what they do, you've got a defensive wall that is very, very efficient at that.
Mm.
But if they're dealing with Scythians or a Mongolian tribe, or they're dealing with Persian archers, that's a different thing entirely. But the Persian archer is the jab on the outside and the nice footwork, you know? Or like the Scythians, the Mongols are the Lyoto Machida Wonderboy counter-striker that they come in, they make you feel like you can reach them, and then they punish you for it.
Well, speaking, you know, these like rampaging armies that went across the world, it must have happened is that they were really good here. Oh yeah, come on, get this end. We were really good, and they went all the way across the other end, and they were like, oh, whoa, we're not. Oh shit, we don't. This doesn't work here.
Yeah.
this is a completely different opponent I've got over here. And then it will go back to how quickly did they adapt? Or that's why the empires rise and they fall, because they, you know, they find all the thing that works and they push forward across the globe with that, and then they get found out gradually, and then the empire falls.
Yeah. Or the characteristic of your military is adaptability, which means that whatever you encounter, you're ready to receive it.
That's next levels.
Something that stood out to me, and I know we've gone off on a history tangent here, but Dan Carlin said this in one of his things when he was talking about the Mongols. So the Scythians were a Mongolian type tribe, you know, from the steppe region. At the same time as the Mongolian tribes were fighting knights of Europe, they were fighting samurai of Japan. But samurai of Japan didn't know that knights of Europe existed. But they're on both battlefronts dealing with...
Yeah, and you've got to be thinking, that's a vastly different opponent.
Vastly different. Weirdly used swords, though. Both, you know, I mean, one's mounted and one not always, not traditionally, but the Scythians had one way of fighting, which was everyone was on horseback. Everyone had a bow and arrow, you know, and they had no settled environment. So you couldn't attack anything. You couldn't lay siege to a Mongolian city because they just packed up and left.
They're mobile.
Anyway,
fascinating.
Went off on a mad tangent. There's a Dan Hardy's Hardcore Headaches podcast coming at some point, which I'm going to talk about Dan Carlin.
Crossover theories.
Yeah. There are a lot, though. There are a lot, though. Like, I mean, all the guerrilla warfare stuff, the Apaches, it is fascinating.
Kasanganai.
Oh, okay, we're starting at this top, are we? Okay.
Oh, right. Why, which way around?
No.
It's just the first one I got on the list. Let me just check
everything's still rolling. Okay, we're good to go. Impa Kasanganai against Sasha Palatnikov. Before we go anywhere, Sasha Palatnikov is the white version of Jared Gooden. Tell me I'm wrong. I literally had Jared Gooden against Alan Joban and Sasha Palatnikov against, who was it? Against Luis Cose. I had both of those fights playing yesterday, and I was switching back and forth between one and the next. They're both kind of slow. They're both a little bit rigid and stiff in their striking, but they can take a hell of a shot.
Yeah.
And they can keep working through. Like, he was almost out in the Kose fight, Palatnikov was. But they are yin and yang, man. I mean, they're the same person. I was looking yesterday and I was switching back and forth between the two fights. I'm like,
well, it's funny that, because you don't see that guy very often. Maybe that's why it stands out. You don't see that, you know, that jacked up guy that's got super endurance and can, you know, because you look good and you think that's not how he should be performing.
He should be able to jump over cars.
Exactly.
But he's kind of rigid and stiff and like he's not quite mastered the functioning of his body yet. And I felt Palatnikov maybe slightly more technical with his striking, but still didn't have the finesse in delivery, you know, and he wasn't particularly quick with it either. He took a beating from Kose.
Whereas Kasanganai is twitchy and he's fast and he will deliver very, very quickly. And for me, at least, that's probably his advantage.
Yeah,
is in that he should always beat him for speed.
Should.
It must be like.
But he could get walked down.
Kasanganai's a good fighter, right? He's made famous by, you know, by something that he wouldn't want to get made famous.
It's like Terry Ettim, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, same thing. Terry Ettim was by far one of the best European fighters that we've ever had. You know, he stood on a world stage and held his own, but was remembered for the Barbosa knockout.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I mean, and you've got to think, Kasanganai was undefeated coming into that. So not only is he coming off his first loss, but he's coming off a highlight reel.
Catastrophic loss.
Yeah, a viral loss.
Oh, it must be sickening.
I mean, how many times has he seen it?
Yeah. Couldn't get away from it for a while, could you? It was everywhere.
It was everywhere. Unless he threw his phone out the window.
Yeah, he just went bush for a little bit until it blew over. Yeah,
but he's still there, and you know, Palatnikov's coming in remembering that fight as well. That will be his everlasting memory of Kasanganai, which is going to give him confidence because he came through hellfire in the first round.
And for his mindset, it must be. You know, it's a completely different picture seeing him off the back of what happened to him than seeing him come in as undefeated and, you know, hyped up as being legit. Mm. Not that he's not legit, but, you know, hyped up as being the next, you know.
For sure.
Having his chance. Yeah, you know what? I hope. I think Kasang and I can beat him for speed, and I actually sort of hope he does and get back on the wagon and you know, restart his UFC career as it was.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
I mean, the good thing for Kasanganai is he's not expecting anything particularly flash from Palatnikov.
No,
I've seen a couple of back kicks in his. Yeah. I've seen a couple of back kicks, but they've not been perfectly measured, you know, like it would need to be for a Joaquin Buckley kind of repeat.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to it. And you know what's interesting as well is that Sasha Palatnikov, he looks very much like Jared Gooden in the way he moves and everything. His posture, his build, it's very strange. As I was researching the rest of this card, there were a couple of other fighters that stood out, and I'm like, oh, he looks like a... like.
Have you been playing a new game? You been playing a new name?
Well, like you know, like when you're on Mortal Kombat and you choose two Scorpion, and you know they're just slightly different.
Yeah,
like they're wearing the same uniforms, but one's yellow and one's red or something like that. That's Palatnikov and Jared Gooden. Yeah. Like if they fought, that's what it would look like. And then a bit further up the card, you've got what's the kid name? And as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, it's Salander.
Yeah.
Saldana, sorry, Luis Saldana. As soon as I saw that, I was like, I want to see him fight Sean O'Malley. And I'm jumping him up a bit, but it, like, he's just, like, he's got that similar kind of movement pattern.
Yeah, okay.
The way he kind of jogs. And then I was watching a bit further up, and Ignacio Bahamondes is the same again.
Oh, man. He's good.
He's very good.
Yeah, he is
but,
good.
But, like, same kind of characteristic, you know, stance switching. Comfortable for me, the stance, very kind of unorthodox, lots of flicking kicks and long-range strikes, uses the head to get out of the way of stuff, punishes you on the way in with checks.
But maybe that's that generation coming through, you know,
I do wonder whether it's anything to do with their physical build as well.
Because yeah, they're it's quite
all
similar, isn't
yeah,
it?
They're
yeah,
all
quite
kind
similar.
Of tall and rangy. I know I've just jumped over a fight. We've got
You've completely
Dal and Joe,
wrecked this schedule. I don't even know where.
Did you choose one? Did you go with
Kasanganai? Is getting back on the wagon. He's going to go.
Is he? I think Palatnikov's going to walk him down.
You think?
Yeah. Mm. I think he's going to walk him down and take everything he's got to offer and then just maul him into the fifth round, into the third round.
That's a horrible situation if you've thrown everything at someone and they still keep coming.
Is Palatnikov going up a weight class here? Because he's listed as a welterweight on here, on Tapology. And he was a welterweight against... Yeah, he was a welterweight against Kosei. Oh, Kasanganai is going down to welterweight. His last fight wasn't welterweight, was it?
Nah.
That's definitely...
Jesus, where's that weight coming from? He's already shredded.
That's definitely swayed my decision then. I'm definitely thinking that Palatnikov can take everything he's got to offer. Kasanganai's going down a weight class. Oh,
where's that weight coming from?
You shifting? You changing your mind? You're leaning?
You know I can't do that. No, I'll just double down on it, the fact that he's going to be way too big for him.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'd missed that. I didn't realise that.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a welterweight, isn't it?
So you're doubling down on...
I'll double down on the power.
Okay.
He's going to keep his speed, and he's going to be too big for him.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
Dar Unjung against William Knight. Poor old William Knight. We talk about him every week. Maybe we're the bad luck. Maybe we're the curse.
Fight yet, I think he might have a good night.
You reckon? Night.
Yeah.
I'm disagreeing with you again.
But I think it depends which... Dang Unjung shows up, because he is a very, very good fighter. I just think I feel like his discipline is not that great. Like if he's almost stuck to what he should be doing, it seems like he just gets a bit loose.
Yeah, a little bit. I thought he was a slow starter after the Ibrahimov fight, because Kadys Ibrahimov just comes out and he's just foot on the gas and he's just everything. But he weathered a storm and took a lot of shots in that first round and was able to finish him in the third when Ibrahimov was tired. But then that Mike Rodriguez fight was a minute into the first round.
Mm.
I mean, Sam Alvey's a messy fight for anybody to have. Sam Alvey is.
He's on this card, isn't he? He's...
Yeah, he's just, you know, he's. I actually think Dar Unjung's pretty good, and I think he's going to have a height and reach advantage here, isn't he? Yeah, he's 6'4". He's a big dude for a light heavyweight.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
And then you look at Will Knight, and he's... He's a 5'10".
He's a power pack, though, isn't he?
He's 5'10".
He's 5'10" and yeah, but 4 feet thick.
5'10" to 6". Look at those cobwebs up there. Some clean. Like 5'10" to 6'4".
I know, but we've seen, you know. So you think John will win that?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
He's sharp. He's good. He's sharp. Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, there's no doubt Will Knight could beat him up, but he's got to beat him up from the ground.
Mm.
He can't start throwing bombs over the top and expect something to knock him out. He's got to take his legs away.
Mm.
Just batter his calves, batter his quads. Because the benefit in him being shorter is that it's much easier for him to get his head off the centre line and into those close pockets where Jung can't really generate a great deal of power. So, like, he can be stepping across and cutting into his legs and you know, and doing damage. But
I think he'll try and get him to the fence and pin him up against the fence and generate some fatigue in him.
Yeah.
Control. Then, he's gonna want to control him, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. But then he's in it. The two things that Knight's got to watch out for.
Might take himself off the edge of the cliff then.
But like knees up the centre and guillotines. Mm. And Jung will look for a guillotine, and he's with him already having that. What is he? 5 inches taller.
Yeah, easy reach over in it. Yeah. Easier reach over. All right. You go for Jung, I'll go for Knight. Okay. See what happens. Salander and Griffin.
Yes. Saldana.
You messed that up.
I like this kid. I think he's very slick. He's got good footwork. He gets tied up again. He gets, you know, tangled up against the fence a bit with his back foot sometimes. I think he's very slick.
I think he's going to punish Jordan because Jordan is very linear, isn't it? And he goes hard, but he goes hard in a straight line.
Call yourself a native psycho. You've got a name to live up to.
Yeah.
That's what we were saying about the other week, you know?
Yeah, fight to what you believe, who you believe you are. Yeah, yeah, I think Saldana. I think the angles that Saldana can create and the fluidity that he strikes with is just a bad fit for Griffin and the way he comes. I think Jordan Griffin's a good fighter. Mm. I'm surprised sometimes he's lost what he's lost, but I just this isn't a good match for him.
I agree.
And it's too straight line.
The benefit is he's coming off that fight against Zalal. And although he didn't win it, Zalal's got really odd movement patterns and he's very mobile. And that's what he's going to be facing against Saldana. The difference is Zalal likes to skirt around the edge of the fence and counter strike, which then automatically puts Jordan Griffin in a position where he's got the centre behind him and he can shoot into the fence. So then a lot of the grappling exchanges they had in that fight were up against the fence with Jordan Griffin kind of half on his back with a hook in. But that part of that could have been negated if Zalal didn't like to fight off the fence anyway, because then Griffin would have had to make him back up to the fence. Whereas Saldana likes to stand in front of you and sting you. And then he's got really nice cutting off skills, which I don't even think are very conscious. He's a long range fighter that is comfortable fighting out of both stances, and that ambidexterity allows him. It opens up those channels for him to go, I'm here, I'm going to go bang, 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 I'm going to feint a kick, but then you're going to step across and I'm just going to put that foot back down into southpaw and like keep striking.
I really like him. I think he's good. I think he's really good.
I agree. Yeah. Jordan Griffin's just not having a good time in the UFC, is he?
No, he's not. But I think he's rightfully in the UFC. Like, I do think he's a good fighter. I just think he's just on a tough run, isn't he?
Yeah, he's definitely competitive with the best in the division. But he's just, I mean, you know, he lost the decision to Ige and Chaz Skelly. They're not easy guys to fight. No. You know, they're gonna test you every part of you.
He might be one of those that if he can stay in the UFC through this chapter of his career, he'll come back even better because of this experience. He's just got to do enough to stay in there, because, like you say, that he's fought some good people. You know, and that experience is all logged.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to do enough to stay in the organization.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. Even if you don't, I've started to feel like this a lot more now. I'm not entirely UFC centric in my thinking. He's like, well, I'm looking at Jordan Griffin and thinking, whoa, that Bellator featherweight division is looking pretty good. PFL, you know, he could jump into PFL. There's some good fights in there for him, and he could he couldn't, instead of staying in the UFC and swimming around in the Shark Tank and not quite realizing himself as a martial artist, I actually think sometimes it's beneficial to look at the competition elsewhere and go, you know what, you might even get paid better than he's getting paid right now because if he's got that UFC name attached to him. Like, he could go over to Bellator and get a couple of fights, like Emmanuel Sanchez and, some guys that have entered the featherweight tournament in Bellator and have not gotten through. They're going to need to bring some new guys in to reinvigorate. And I look at someone like Jordan Griffin and think to myself, he could definitely in.
He could figure, couldn't he?
Yeah.
Definitely. You know,
and it might be psychologically better for him to go away and actually have better performances against a slightly lower tier of fighter than not quite realising.
I get a feel for him. If he got a couple of wins under his belt, his confidence would be back up. And, like I said, a couple of times, I think he's good. I do think he's good.
You just think that Saldana's going to light him up.
I don't think he's quite good enough for Saldana, no.
I'm excited to see that kid and the rest of his career for sure.
Jack Shaw.
For sure.
For sure.
Jack Shaw, Hunter Azure.
Yeah.
This is a well-matched fight. I'm a big fan of Jack Shaw, and I know how talented and skilled he is. Hunter's an interesting matchup for him because he's got the NAIA wrestling background, and you can tell that there's always that threat of a level change. But then he couples it so well with his power left hook, power right to the body, power overhand.
Yeah.
You kind of got to pick your poison. You either get out of the way or you try and predict which one's coming.
He ain't sharp enough for Jack, I don't think. I don't think so, no.
I'm trying not to be too biased.
The one thing I really appreciate about Jack is about him and his team really, is how his career's been curated. Huge amateur record, blasted through the Cage Warriors scene, and now, you can see he's in there and he's still relatively young, but he's in there and he's a good, solid, well-rounded fighter, isn't he? Like, I really appreciate what they've sort of done, how they've done it.
Yeah.
You can just tell it's not by accident. He is who he is. Like,
it's very systematic.
That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
The plan's there. I think this is a good fight for him.
Yeah.
Obviously, you would think that Azure would set up something, like you were saying, would set up a takedown with the threats that he does have with his hands, but he's going to want to take him down. But I think Jack's going to be all right with that. I don't think he's going to want that to happen, but he's going to be all right with that. He's very dangerous on the ground. But I think Jack could probably catch him on the way in, to be honest.
Yeah. Like, I think, there's got to be there's a reach and height advantage for Jack in this fight. And I think that's going to serve him well. But I do think at some point this fight is going to end up on the floor, and I do think it would be Azure that tries to take it there.
Yeah.
I would say that Jack looks more confident with his striking, but Hunter commits to his low kicks and he does a lot of damage with them. And I think that's something that Jack needs to figure out, fairly early on, so Hunter's confidence doesn't get on the rise too much. And he starts chopping away at those low kicks. Because you can start shutting soccer down kicking, elements of it. Yeah.
Soccer kicking those low kicks. Yeah, he's got a funny technique, doesn't he? He doesn't really turn that stance leg around.
Yeah.
He's got a straight. Yeah, it's a bit strange.
It leaves him a bit on the centre line, and that's where Jack's reach comes into play. But, it gets interesting when it hits the floor for me, because I think Hunter's got confidence in his wrestling. And I think he feels like he can take people down, drown them up against the fence in that corner. And I think if Jack spends too much time trying to get back to his feet, he might just find himself with Hunter on his case the
dragging
whole time.
Him.
Just it could be a very frustrating one, especially if Hunter immediately decides he doesn't want to deal with Jack's striking at range.
He's just one-eyed for the wrestle. Yeah,
yeah.
He makes very good decisions, Jack. Made some very good decisions. I've seen him a couple of times bail out of some of the grapple or going for subs and just bail out because he's going to lose position. I was like,
mature.
Very mature for.
But that's what I was talking about earlier. He's not like, he's not panicked by losing control.
Yeah.
Like, if he sees there's a situation where he's not going to be able to maintain control and he could, he's going to potentially lose position, he'll just give the position and then reestablish control.
Yeah.
It's like he manages them very well. I mean, you know, you saw it all the way through Cage Warriors, like especially with, you know, with the lower level opposition that he was fighting in his earlier fights. He's always been very systematic like that, and you could just see him imposing that game onto his opponents.
Yeah, I think it could be a good fight, but I think Jack should come out on top here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hope so. He's a very, very good prospect. I like him.
Yeah, he's a good kid, yeah. Jack is. Heavyweights. So Jorgen De Castro, we saw in Fight Island,
yeah.
And he was a lot of fun.
Loves it.
And he had a lot of fun with Carlos Felipe.
Yeah.
And Felipe was just he Diaz'd him, didn't he? But then on the flip side, you've got Georges Danho. And I remember calling this guy's fight.
Two of his fights. I was watching them last night, yeah. But I don't know where he's been. He's disappeared off the face of the earth and then suddenly just come back. So 2018, I think, was the last time.
No, it wasn't. It was before that. So he fought Daniel Omelianchuk in 2016.
16.
And then he fought Christian Colombo in the same year, 2016.
Do you know where he's been?
I don't. Well, he was matched in 2017 and he withdrew due to injury. Then he was matched in 2019 and he withdrew again, but it doesn't say why. And then he was matched with Taito Avassa at UFC 250. And the event was cancelled due to coronavirus.
Right. Long time. I mean,
it's been a long time.
How you get a sort of read on him with that amount of time? Like, you would, to be fair, in 2016, there was a difference between the first fight and the second fight. He got himself in better condition. He gassed in that first fight badly. Mm. And then
Pretty quick as well. Yeah. But there was a lot of excitement.
Like 90 seconds, I think.
Yeah, but there was a lot of excitement. Yeah. He was like, he was trying to match, because Omelianchuk's got, he's got good movement for a big guy. But you could see that Danho was like trying to match his movement and he just didn't suit him.
He throws that big overhand right, doesn't he, with like his whole weight behind it. I mean, he could have done all sorts in this time. You know, he could come like a completely different guy.
What do you mean when you say he could have done all sorts?
What couldn't you do in that amount of time off the radar? But,
absolutely.
You know, he might come back with a gas tank. He might come back lean down. Who knows? I know he'll have to be prepared to bite down a little bit against De Castro. Like he's got a remit, hasn't he?
But then De Castro is not particularly massive for the weight class, and he does slow down as well.
Yeah,
he's carrying an extra bit of timber, and
you know you'd be surprised if it wasn't anything. It was anything other than a brawl, really, wouldn't it? Because you can't see Danho coming and he's just revolutionised his striking. Now he's super efficient and crisp and doesn't waste any energy, which would be a great move for him, bearing in mind the weight in his punches. And we sort of know who De Castro is. And when you've got those two things coming together, it's sort of a flip of a coin, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. My only concern is that the nerves and anxiety that we saw in his debut against Omelianchuk. Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, it's not only has it been... Because, like, you've got to think... If you look at those dates, I mean, it was not quite a year between his last fight before his UFC debut and the Omelianchuk fight.
Yes, not a lot of fights in the last 10 years.
I mean, that's
it?
The end of May, the end of May in 2015. He won by TKO in the first round, Desert Force 17.
Awesome.
And then he made his UFC debut at the end of February of the following year. So he had like a good few months out there. Stepped in, looked really, really anxious in that first opening couple of minutes with Omelianchuk. Got himself in better shape for the Colombo fight and then has been out for...
A decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's hard to
pick him really off that. It's hard to pick him...
Only because you know that De Castro's up for a scrap and
he
can punch, that's for sure.
He can punch and he's in form as it was. Yeah, it's hard to pick anyone else, really. It's hard to pick Danho without knowing any more about what's been going on, you know?
The reality is he could come in looking in decent shape and he could clinch in the first round and tire De Castro out. That's what I would do if I was him, but, you know, it's still not going to be easy to do. That anxiety is going to hit him for sure. That's a long time out.
Mm.
John McDessie against Ignacio Bahamondes.
Man.
Right. This is a bit like that the Almeida O'Malley fight. You've got John McDessie's
a
good striker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. It's like, oh, we really like you, Ignacio. This is your first test.
Yeah.
Go past this and you know, this you're on the path. You're on the superhighway.
Yeah.
But you gotta get past the vet first.
I mean, McDessie's a good striker. He's a little bit, I mean, he's going to be shorter, isn't he? He's going to give up a height.
Is he 5'8"? 5'9"?
Let me pull up the stats on this one.
Mate, Ignacio is 6'3" at lightweight. He's 35-1 in kickboxing before he even came to MMA.
Yeah, he's got a 7-inch reach advantage. Yeah. And he's got him listed as orthodox here, but he's not. Strikes landed per minute, 8.78. And McDessie's high with 5.36.
Yeah. You mean you've always got to be careful picking against experience, haven't you? Because, you know, you don't survive in this game unless you have, over long periods of time, you don't survive in this game unless you have a very competent skill set. But
you've got to impose that experience.
Man, I think this is a horrible match for him.
That's where it gets difficult. Like, I mean, like McDessie's been out almost a year. The last time he fought was Francisco Trinaldo. It's not like he's on a win streak and his confidence is at an all time high. He's quite inconsistent in his performances as well as far as like regularity. 2017, 2018, then a cancelled fight. 2019 cancelled fight, then he fought, then another one was cancelled. You know what I mean? It's like, and then you look at Ignacio and he's like a young kid that's just finding his rhythm. What was he born in? 97, I think.
That's horrific.
Yeah, see, McDessie's 35 and it's just like, he's good and he's got a good level of understanding. Just like Ken Shamrock had a really good level of understanding up to UFC 40.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was
he's a club man. He's a roster fighter, isn't he? Like every time he stepped up and faced one of the, you know, the top guys in the division, he's not quite made it. And then he's dropped down in it. And he'll compete with those 15 to 25, you know, I know you don't rank that, but 15 to 25 kind of guys. He's more than capable of hanging with them. But when he steps up to that top bit, he's not quite there, is he?
Just not quite. And you know, he's outreached.
Outspeed, shorter. Outreach. Yeah.
I really enjoy watching Ignacio fight. We're talking about that. It's like the new style of MMA striking where they kind of stand a bit heavy on their lead leg and they've got good. I'll tell you one thing that he was doing really well. He was drifting back. So he was switching he was from orthodox. He was switching back to southpaw and then hitting him with the left hand as his opponent was coming in.
Dragging him. Yeah. I love that.
It was really slick.
We're chatting with the boys at the gym about that. Yeah. So almost like it's that range game, isn't it? You think you're in one space and then you get encouraged to move forward, and as you've switched that stance is then you throw that strike. Mm. I love it. That's very beautifully done by him, I think.
So he's got a couple of sub losses on his record early on. 2016, he lost by armbar, and 2017, he lost by rear naked choke. But then his other losses are decision. He's been around a little while, considering he's young. Made his pro debut in 2015. What was he 12? He's only 23 now.
Wow!
Right,
Listen, this will be an interesting test for him, I suppose. But it's his to lose, like. Yeah. You know, you've been given this for a reason. You got to go out, do your job, and then we'll bump you up.
Yeah.
But this will be, I think he, if this goes away, I think it will go. I think he will be a problem in this division.
I agree.
Moving forward, you know, and what is he, 23?
23.
So you got to think, well, he's peaking at 27. That's a long time to get better, innit?
I'll tell you, I'm going to go back and watch Miguel Torres. Remember Miguel Torres, WEC? And
the mullet.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to go back and watch him because he was a similar build to these guys. Like he had a similar build to these guys. He stood kind of heavy on his lead leg and he was a little bit hunched over.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back and watch some of his fights, see if he switched stance as much. Because like these guys, Bahamondes, Saldana and O'Malley, they've all got that same characteristic in their stance where they're, like the head's there, but you can't kind of get it because it's always moving. And if you swing, it's not going to be there. I think these kids are onto something. I think we might be turning a corner on MMA striking.
Awesome.
And I think that this might be a little window into it. Talking of, you're going Bahamondes, aren't you? Norma Dumont against Erin Blanchfield. Mm. Did you watch any of Blanchfield's fights?
Yeah.
I watched her last fight against Brogan Sanchez in Invicta. She's
been on a tear in Invicta. She's 5-6, I think.
She's 21, born in 99.
Wow.
Are you feeling old?
Yeah, I know you don't like to talk about it, but yeah,
some of this great beer.
Yeah. Yeah, quick, get it off. I watched Victoria Leonardo. I watched her almost kick her head straight off three
Clean
times.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost. Yeah, she's Renzo Gracie, right, out of NYC.
Mm-hmm.
Wicked.
Really
Man,
good.
Man, that'd be a trip.
And Dumont's, need to get out there. And Dumont's good as well, but she's, you know, not quite as experienced by one fight, but way more established in a game at 30.
Mm.
You know?
I quite like her. I think she brings that energy. Like, she can see, she sort of backs herself. She backs what she can do.
Yeah.
I thought she was doing all right against Megan Anderson. And then she basically walked onto a big right hand, didn't she? And Megan dropped her. But I thought it's funny to say that, isn't it? Up until the point you got knocked out. But I thought she was doing all right.
Yeah.
Super aggressive. She looked strong. It's pretty close.
It's a very different fight as well.
Mm.
It's a very different kind of fight. I'm excited for it because I think that for a start, this is a flyweight fight. So has she moved down another weight class? Yeah, she has. So Norma Dumont fought at featherweight against Megan Anderson in her debut. Then she went down and she won a unanimous decision against Ashley Evans-Smith at bantamweight. And now she's fighting Erin Blanchfield. This one's at bantamweight as well. So Blanchfield's gone up. Okay, well, that's interesting then.
I think she might be too much for Blanchfield, you know.
Yeah. I didn't realise she'd gone up a weight class. That was her last fight at bantamweight. No, it wasn't. Flyweight. What's with these people moving weight classes? Although, I mean, you know, 21, it might be a stage where she just didn't feel like she could make that weight anymore. You never know. She's aggressive, though, and she fires that right hand like it's going to knock her opponent out every time.
I'm going with Dumont.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think she might. I just think she might out enthuse her a little bit. And I wasn't blown away with Blanchfield's technical ability. Like, she's of a level, but I wasn't like, oh wow, she's really slick.
Yeah.
Dumont. This next one, mate.
I know. I kind of feel bad for Gamrot because it's almost like that fight against Kutataladze, you kind of just don't deserve to have a loss on your record after a fight like that.
And who did he piss off to get that as your debut?
I know, right? Kutataladze is good. Very, very good.
I tell you what, that's not a great match for Parry Pimblett. I would pour cold water on that very quickly if I was around Paddy. I'd leave that well alone.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Gamrot's good, isn't he?
He is very good.
He's very, very good.
But I mean, I like Scott Holtzman as well. He's a very experienced and durable fighter, well conditioned. Mm. You know, 37, doing this because he loves it, still in great shape. You know, I mean, that spinning back fist against Dariush was just it was just perfectly timed. But then you look at his other fights, and he's a handful. He's physically a handful.
He is.
I just don't know if he's quite as slick as Gamrot.
I mean, like you said, that the Kutataladze result is almost like that will lure you into thinking that it's not what it is.
Mm.
Like, Gamrot tore through KSW, and probably that's why he was given Guram as a debut, because he went on such a tear through KSW.
See, I think that was a bad call, matching those two up in their debut.
You could have built them, because the thing is, brought them together four or five fights later. Yeah,
like, you could have put Gamrot in there against, like, say this fight was made for Gamrot's UFC debut. Mm. Like, I'm not, you know, like Scott's a formidable opponent, but Gamrot and Guram are in a very similar situation where they're coming into a new organization and no one knows how good they are. So you put them against one another and you get a great fight, but then they both come out the other side and no one really knows how good they are.
Mm.
Like, you kind of want, you know, you want Gamrot to come in and fight Nick Lentz, and you want Guram to come in and fight Jim Miller.
Mm.
And then you see both of these new signings just look like killers.
Devastating, yeah.
You know? It was almost like, and this, you do see this sometimes, which I'm happy I can talk about this stuff now. You did, like, sometimes when a fighter's signed from another organization, if they've been very successful in that organization, it's almost like they get matched deep against someone early. That's unknown as a way of like you know, Ben Askren comes over and he gets Robbie Lawler straight off.
Yeah.
Like, of course he was going to step into the organization and get someone good, but if you want to bring Ben Askren in and introduce him as a contender, then you give him fights that are, you give him the Maia fight first, or I mean, obviously that, you know, didn't work to, out to, for him
to make,
either,
do you feel, to make a point, is that what
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah, I feel like, so. Well, I feel like that.
You're in the UFC now.
Yeah.
This is what happens here. Whether it's fair or not, it's just like, well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you look at the guys that came over from Pride when Pride was bought, and look at who they were matched up against and how. Oftentimes you're like, that was a tough matchup.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's
interesting.
I get it. I love Kamaru, man. I love him. I think he's going to be wicked.
I think he'll
be too much for Holtzman.
I agree.
And like you say, this is probably the first fight in that he deserved.
Yeah.
And you know, nothing against Holtzman at all, really, but I just think this is... I think Gamrot and Gurama are the future of the division. You know, I think that, you know, over the next 4 or 5 years, you're going to see them rapidly rise up through the ranks and be competing at the top.
Which is scary when we've just been saying the same thing about Ignacio Bahamondes.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he's the wave after these guys, but they're, I mean, you wouldn't want to be a contender swimming in the lightweight division if you weren't confident in your skills.
It's amazing
right
division.
Now. It is just terrifying, some of the guys. Jim Miller also on the card as well against Selecki.
Jim Miller, already been around forever. 2017 fought 3 times, 2018 fought 3 times, 2019 fought twice, 2020 fought 3 times. And Jim likes to fight.
Didn't he have Lyme's disease as well amongst all of that?
Yeah. I don't know much about that disease, but like, I think it makes it really difficult, nutrition-wise, makes it really difficult to sort of hold weight, hold calories and what have you.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know much about
hopefully it. Hopefully, I'm not speaking out of line then, but I think it's...
It's very fatiguing, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I think that was the big problem, because I think, like, his point was, like, I've been doing this with Lyme's disease.
Yeah, you know, imagine me without it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, he's synonymous. He has UFC history. Like, he's really is part of the furniture, sort of, isn't he? You know, I feel like
he's had more fights than anybody else.
Cross generations.
Yeah. I think Jim Miller's had more fights or more octagon time than everybody else in the UFC. I'll look into that in a second. But,
yeah.
But then, like, you know, just as we were talking about with Goram and Gamrot, like, they both came into the UFC against one another. Selecki came in onto the Contender Series and then got the Matt Wyman to introduce him to the division, and then the Austin Hubbard, who was another rising contender. You know, that could have gone either way. But he's getting another veteran in Jim Miller. It's like someone that's, like, Jim Miller's record, 32-15 against Selecki, who's 10-2.
Yeah.
You know, what was I watching the other day? Oh, 35, USC 35, with Jens Pulver in the main event. And BJ Penn was 4-0 at the time, and Jens Poole was like 23-4 or something.
Wicked. I think.
Which way do you see this?
Unfortunately, as much as I love Jim Miller, I think this is a little bit of a change of the guard. I actually think Selecki's a bit Jim Miller-ish, but a younger version.
Yeah.
And I think this, you know, this might just be the change of the guard. It'd be fascinating to see how it goes. I mean, I'm interested to see where Jim Miller's at. It might be the young bull taking over the old bull a little bit.
Yeah. Selecki reminds me a little bit of Joe Lauzon when he first came into the UFC. Like he's got a wild eye for like fast jiu-jitsu.
Mm.
Like, you look at his record and he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 finishes in the first round out of 10 fights. And a lot of them are rear naked chokes. He's got a guillotine, he's got a triangle, but what, 3, 4, 5 rear naked chokes. He's a fast worker. And an amateur record was the same.
Mate, if he goes guillotine to the floor, it's going to be, it'll be some wild scrambles, won't there?
Jim Miller's got to expect a rough 3 minutes of tussle.
Mm.
And especially when he's dry. If I'm Jim Miller, I'm getting a sweat up.
Fast.
I'm coming out with every layer of... Is the new Venom kit out?
It is, yeah.
Have you seen the numbers they're getting?
What do you mean?
Like the additional money for the fighters. Yeah. Like you were making 40 grand, now you're making 42.
But they made a big deal out of that as well.
Come on.
When I read that, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like the amount of fighters that took a pay cut when that came in. It's crazy. It's crazy. Like poor old, what's his name? Vitor Belfort. He was on about 200 million quid a month from Sky down in South America. Yeah, right. He was raking it in.
And then what? It's all cut 30 off. Grand. It's all gone. 30 yeah. grand from Reebok.
Yeah.
Oh, we see. We'll see what the Venom kit looks like. I haven't really seen any of the kit.
I'm not seeing anything. No. I mean, I do like Venom. I've got a pair of gloves in there that I still use that are Venom. I mean, they made some signature shorts for me a few years ago. They were all good. And everyone used to cut that underside bit of fabric off as well. Do you remember?
Yeah,
to
right.
To make them like the high thigh tie boxing shorts. Yeah.
No, I think Selecki might take it, but
you're going with the young boys.
Yeah, I do like Jim Miller, and I do have the utmost respect for him.
Yeah, this one's Rock'em Sock'em.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just any time that Mike Perry doesn't have some kind of outburst on social media in a day is a good day, innit? He's a little loose to say the least.
I think Daniel Rodriguez is a much better striker than Mike Perry. I'm not sure he's got the same kind of power in his shots. You know, he had to hit Tim Means a bunch of times before he put him down. But
he
hit him a lot.
Yeah,
but like his striking's far more fluid, and he's a much better counter striker than most of the people that Mike Perry's fought. But on the flip side to that, I will say Mike Perry's last couple of fights, he's looked like a grappler. Mm. Like he was on Tim Means's back in the first couple of minutes of that fight, and nobody would have expected that.
Yeah.
He just doesn't... And it wasn't that he was on his back, it was that he took his back in a technical way. It was like, I can't remember who was commentating, was it Rogan? And it was nothing, and he actually made a point, he's like, he took his back in a technical way. It was
complete surprise.
He's got some purple belt back-taking skills.
Yeah, He's just a bit up and down. Like his record and his private life seem to mirror each other. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, I'm not sure what's going on here. Yeah, but he's a tough dude. He is very skilled. You know, he's a skilled fighter. Clearly, he's a skilled fighter.
Naturally, as an athlete, what's your read on him? Like if he walked into a gym, would you expect him to test highly on?
No,
because he looks like there's a lot of stiffness in his body when he's punching, but he does look like he can pack a punch.
Yeah. Maybe something like a drop jump test, because he's stiff, he would rebound very quickly. Yeah.
A bit like Marvin Vittori kind of thing.
He reminds me so much
of Phil Baroni. Reminds me so much of Phil Baroni. If he came out with some shades,
what, he messages you every week asking for a fight? I didn't realise he was doing that.
Well, Phil, I think he's just signed with BKB again. I think
is he?
We've got a soldier
that will roll in a heartbeat.
Take his face clean off.
Oh, that would not be a good night.
It wouldn't be a good night.
No.
Jimmy's knuckles are sharp enough as it is, even with gloves on.
Bring it. Mike's tough. You know, he's got a lovely chin. It takes a lot to hurt him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I do feel like this is a nice fight for Rodriguez. I think it almost gives him a bit of a stage to show what he can do. Because it's a good, you know, Mike's he's a big name in the division. He's the big name in the sport still.
Yeah. And this is Rodriguez's opportunity as well, given the fact that it's Mike Perry.
Mm.
Because he's one of the bigger names in the sport. His name and marketability outweigh his actual ability.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, just because he's a bit crazy, isn't he? And he says a lot. Yeah.
And he finds himself in interesting circumstances because he's like a pit bull on a leash. He's like, you know.
In it.
But then, this is exactly how this fight's going to go down. So the fight's going to start off. Mike Perry's going to try and walk him down and try and crack him with a few shots. And Rodriguez is going to cruise around the edge of the octagon. And he's going to sting him in the face with the jab a few times. Perry's going to get frustrated, and he's going to start grappling Rodriguez up against the fence. And Rodriguez is going to use his good takedown offense, and Mike Perry's going to start to get tired. And then Rodriguez is going to back him up.
Yeah.
And it'll be a standing TKO with Perry just taking shots because he's so tired. End of the second, beginning of the third.
Nice.
That's hard to argue.
Very hard to argue against. you know what made me side with Rodriguez was the Dolby fight, because Dolby's a good good fight in there. That was a good fight. I enjoyed watching that. There was a lot going on in that fight. Yeah.
There's a lot of variety really in well. Dalby's game. And yeah. He did a good job of not succumbing to any of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, the Dwight Grant thing, you know, he was, even though he was taken down and he was under some grappling pressure early in that, turned that one around really quick. I think, don't get me wrong, I think Mike Perry's improving, and I think he's improving, his ground game is improving very quickly. I just don't know as his takedown, his wrestling game is improving at the same pace. Mm. I mean, his body lock on Tim Means to get him to the floor was a nice takedown, but there was still a lot of, you know, there's still a lot of horsepower in there that runs out after a round and a bit. And that's when I think Rodriguez's takedown offense is good enough to be problematic.
In a different era, we would have called that roid strength. Pretty much, wouldn't we? But we backed off that phrase now, thanks to USADA.
Yeah.
Yeah, lock him in. I think Rodriguez has got a good shot here. And I think it's important for him to win this.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Dern against Ansaroff. What's your first pick?
Ansaroff, but I went back and forth a little bit.
Mm.
Because she confuses me a bit, because I don't feel like she's that great, but she hangs in it long enough that she gets results.
Mm.
She's not amazing at anything, really, is she? But she's just durable and good at a couple of things. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what she's done in the time off, apart from having a kid, obviously.
Yeah, I think that has been the main priority. When I spoke to Amanda a little while ago, she was talking about how it was a pretty rough birth, from what I understand. It's amazing that she's turned it around and she looks in incredible shape again. The whole process completely baffles me, as you know, for a female athlete to have a child and then all of a sudden to be like back in competition shape. I'm like,
I don't know what their support structures are around them, but you've got, you know they're both preparing for fights at stages, and your first kid is horrific. Like, your whole life changes, and all the routines that you had in place that make you good at something, they all change. But, you know, I don't know what their support structure is around them. But
on the flip side, Mackenzie Dern's not much, she's not been a mother much longer.
Yeah.
And she did the same thing. Like, her last fight against Janderoba, she looked in the best shape that she'd looked in her entire career.
Mm.
And that was a hard fought battle. I mean, you know, the two fights before that, the armbar and the knee bar against Marcos and Hannah Cyphers.
Yeah, she's clearly a problem, isn't she, with her wrestling. I could see this going the way that Nina and Tatiana went.
100%.
You know, it could easily go like that, couldn't it? Because I know Tatiana and Mackenzie are different in certain ways, but some of their cores are aligned, aren't they?
Yeah, Tatiana Suarez never gave Nina Ansaroff the time or space to get comfortable with her striking.
Yeah.
And that was, like, she was always on the back foot. And even when there was a bit of space, she was striking tentatively because she was expecting to get closed down.
Yeah, the only thing is, I feel like Tatiana's a better version of Mackenzie.
Well, she's a better wrestler for sure.
Mm.
But Mackenzie commits to her takedowns because she's not bothered where she lands.
Right, okay.
And this is the thing. And so, like, say, for example, if Mackenzie takes Nina down, Nina's first port of call would be rubber guard, which is not necessarily the best thing to do against a good judoka, a good jiu-jitsu player with good foundation, because she'll get her guard passed and then she's in problems defending her back and her arms. If Ansaroff is able to stifle the takedown a bit, they might land in a position where Mackenzie's still able to sweep her and get on top. Like, Nina just needs to disengage entirely. And like you said, you know, from the Suarez fight, I mean, she scrambled well. She was able to get back to her feet, but she wasn't able to get the space to get into the fight. And I kind of feel like Mackenzie Dern might do that to her. Purely because Dern is on that role already. She's, you know, she's got those three fights under her belt after, you know, coming off a loss. And I don't know. You've got to think there's a lot going on for Nina at the moment.
Yeah.
Coming back to compete and coming off a loss. And
the one thing I feel like Nina does, or certainly does in periods, is she manages that distance on her feet quite well, and she won't let herself get swarmed. Now, occasionally she gets caught, especially, you know, obviously Tatiana, whatever you, when that elite level wrestling is there.
Mm.
but I do think she has a good skill of distance management. But maybe Mackenzie's just too much for her. And if that's her intent, she's going to come in and she's going to put her on her back. She'll probably put her on her back, won't she? Yeah, tough one.
You know, the one loss on Dern's record is, you know, is from Amanda Hebus, who trains with Nina Ansaroff at ATT. The game plan's put in place. If you can keep space and then force, then strike her as she's walking towards you, definitely it's winnable. But if Dern runs at her and grabs her and drags her to the floor and then undermines her confidence in a takedown offense, that's a different fight. Which way you go?
Yeah, Dern, I think. Yeah. But I've flip-flopped a couple of times.
Yeah, it's an easy one to go back and forth on. It could be a very competitive fight. But I do think Ansaroff is underestimated. I do think she is. Yeah. She's better than... She's always better. When I watch her, I'm always
team
like,
around her as well. Like, yeah, tough, for sure. Tough team.
Sam Alvey against Julian Marquez.
Wow, the ultimate dad fights. Sam's just
Has he gone back down to middleweight?
Who knows? I bet he's great at barbecues. I bet he can barbecue like a motherfucker.
I think he's a psychopath.
You reckon?
I don't think that's not a real smile. There's no way that's a real smile. It's there's something maniacal about it. This, you know, like at any point he could just completely crack and blow up a hospital or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no one's
like,
that happy.
Like walk away in a nurse's outfit. I can see him playing that role of like the...
No one's that happy all the time. No. Surely not. He's just definitely started his own promotion, Ultimate Dad Fights or something like that. That's what he looks like. I think he's in a bit of trouble. I quite like Marquez. He'd been quiet, hadn't he, Marquez, until he came back against Pitolo.
Yeah. But this is Sam Alvey coming back down to middleweight, which I always felt like it was a much better weight class for him.
Yeah, there's no reason he needs to be heavier than that. There's plenty of mud on that.
Did he lose four fights in a row? He did lost four fights in a row at light heavyweight. And he had one win over Jan Vellante, who's also not really a light heavyweight.
It's one of those. I feel like Marquez should probably win it, but Sam Alvey's so experienced. He's been around for so long. You just got to be careful picking against experience, haven't you?
Yeah. He's got that weird thudding power in his shots as well, Sam Alvey, where you kind of go, if he lands, he's going to hurt you. It might not be pretty, but it's going to hurt if it lands.
Yeah, but that ugliness sometimes finds the space, doesn't it? You know, because he's a bit, to use Owen's words, janky. He's just a bit.
He's got that double mouth. I fucking hate those double mouth guys. Yeah. Because like,
never worn
they
them,
always
can't
like push them out and like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like spit coming off them and like bouncing off the fence. It's such a bad look. Which way are you going?
I'm going Marquez. I think I feel like Marquez should take that.
Wins because I'm. If Sam just never seems like he wants to be there anymore.
No, right?
He never seems like he wants to be there. This is a good fight, though.
Are we by the way, is Carl Daukaus a relation?
Yes, yeah, they're brothers.
Right, I meant to check it, and I never ended up checking it, but I was assuming he was. You know, see that name particularly
similar
often.
Games as well. The only downside for Carl Daukaus is that he's... The benefits that Chris Daukaus has got at heavyweight have not transferred down to middleweight in the same way.
I think he's in a world of pain here.
I think you might be right. I mean, he's only lost one fight, but he's in competitive fights. And tell me this, did you watch Daukaus's last fight against Stolzfus?
Yeah.
Does he not look like Tom Hardy?
Yeah, he does look a bit like Tom Hardy, yeah. Yeah.
See, that was like, it's Tom Hardy.
He beat Stolzfus up.
Beat him up pretty
beat
good.
Him up, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
But Hisriev, is that the right pronunciation?
Yeah, Hisriev.
Man.
Yeah.
He's a beast.
He's a monster.
Work rate, savage ground and pound, like horrible ground and pound. He's got a beautiful left kick out of the southpaw stance.
I want to see the selfie that was taken in his Tapology profile picture. Have you seen it?
No. No.
We'll crop it.
Right.
Amy can stick it on the page for us. If you know this guy or you can get a hold of this selfie, I want to see it. That is one of the best selfies because he's like, now's not the time.
Is that before they fight?
I think so, yeah.
He's like, bro,
he's not sweating, there's no blood on him. Yeah, it's like...
Can you leave me alone? things you do for the Grammy, mate, that liver shot from hell, straight from the depths.
Steal your soul, that
EFN one. 6. I can't remember who he was fighting, but man, that's about as clean as you can ever land it in it.
Yeah.
Like you felt like it like absorbed into his body and like was enveloped by liver.
Yeah.
Man, I just think like I think Carl's quite good. I think he's a good fighter. He's good, highly skilled, but I just feel like he's outmatched.
This guy's a monster.
This could be fight of the night, you know.
Yeah, this guy's a monster.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, anybody that ground and pounds Paul Harris in under a minute, you know, like whatever, you can have what you like.
Yeah, I think he's in a bit of trouble.
I like I said, I like Daukus. I like the Daukus brothers, but like, I think they're very similar. They're very similar. It's just that one's a middleweight and one's a heavyweight, and the fighting style is much more suitable to heavyweight.
You've got a key point of difference at heavyweight that you don't necessarily have at middleweight. Yeah.
That's it. Fat, tough, durable, fast hands, good movement, good ground game, but I think at middleweight you need something that really stands out above the crowd. You can't, you know, and I agree.
I'm excited to see his ribs.
Terrifying.
13-0. Yeah, I'm excited to see him.
He could tear through this division. He could tear through this division. I mean, like you look at the outside of the top ten, guys like Strickland, Tavares, Akhmadov, Shabazian, Chris Weidman. Like they're all in deep shit if this guy starts making waves pretty soon because he's coming for all of those.
Another one off the production line. Have you got his profile? What's his? How old is he?
He is 30.
Oh, okay.
The Black Wolf. He's only 5'9" though for middleweight.
Yeah. I don't think he cares.
No, I don't think he cares.
I don't think he cares at all. That's gonna be fun, man. Well, I've got that down as fight of the night.
Yeah.
Not that we have that, but definitely for a performance bonus.
For sure. So here's a fighter that's flying under the radar like no other. Arnold Allen. 16-1.
Yeah.
Not lost since joining the UFC.
Out of TriStar.
His only loss was a decision loss to Marcin Wojciechowski, who's a good level fighter. And he's coming off wins over Nick Lentz and Gilbert Melendez.
Yeah.
And he's not even just touching his potential yet.
27, just coming into the peak, 16-1. Tore up Cage Warriors, didn't he? Very athletic, super sharp. The only thing, as I was watching both of these, actually, there seems to be quite a big disparity between the top five in that division and everyone else. Like, I look at that 6-15... And I'm like, oh, you got some work to do with to get to those top five. Those top five are another level at the minute. And I suppose you could say that about a lot of divisions, couldn't you? Because in general, you know, the top five rise up there and they have their peak and you know, the next crew come through. But
it might be just a little bit of a maturity thing, though. And I think some of that maturity comes when you fight veterans.
Mm.
I think the fact that Arnold Allen's now faced Nick Lentz and Gilbert Melendez, they'll be guys that he remembers watching when he was a kid, enjoying the UFC as a fan. Like Melendez is a long-time veteran. Nick Lentz has been in the UFC for I don't know how many years.
Yeah.
But Arnold Allen was probably 16 watching Nick Lentz make his UFC debut. So I think maybe from the reassurance of those couple of wins, and you don't see those same wins on Sadiq Youssef's career. You know, I mean, he's got good fighters. I mean, Andre Feely's a good fighter, but he's not reached that status of a Nick Lentz or a Melendez yet.
It's funny, like Youssef, I was really unimpressed by how he went about the Benitez fight. Mm. I was like, he was just rushing. He sort of threw one two. Like he was just trying to force that to land that. Mm. I was really unimpressed. But then when he fought Feely, I thought he was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
I thought he could have come a cropper in that fight quite badly, and he just managed things a little bit better. I thought it was one of probably his best performances of his career, actually.
Mm. I think if Arnold Allen comes out and fights how he's capable with the confidence that you would expect someone to have with his skills and his conditioning,
yeah,
I think it's his fight because I feel like he's turned a corner recently, taking those veterans to a decision that maybe. Maybe Youssef hasn't yet.
Mm.
And I think Youssef's good. Like when he made his UFC debut against Suman Mokhtarian, I remember I remember being octagon side for that and hearing the power of those shots, even landing on the arms.
Yeah.
And the referee was like, I don't want to see any more of this.
Okay.
Like, he's an incredibly powerful guy, but I think it's going to be difficult for him to hit Arnold Allen.
Mm. Like, Allen's quite elusive, isn't he?
Very elusive. Yeah. Good head movement, good wrestling ability. So, like, he can work defensively up to the point where he feels like he wants to get into the fight. Like same thing with the Mads Burnell fight. It was probably one of his best performances, because I know how good Mads is. And in that fight, he just kind of managed it to the point where the choke was there, and he took it, finished it.
Good test. It's a good test for both of these. This is their big boy test, isn't it? Like, all right, whichever one of you two wins this, you know.
Especially with the position on the card.
Yeah.
Especially with the position on the card.
I think if Sadiq rushes it like he has done, and he comes out predictable like he has done, it's not going to go very well for him. Yeah. Alan can pick him apart. I think, to be honest, I think that's probably how it's going to go.
Yeah.
I can see Arnold getting a good win here and go 17-1. And
is that the way he's going then?
Yeah. He's in a good spot then.
Yeah.
This is really important for him. Really important fight for him.
He's 10th at the
moment.
10th,
yeah.
And after this, he gets into that mix with the Dan Ige's, Josh Emmett, Calvin Kattar, Korean Zombie.
Let's not overlook this fight, but that'd be a nice one next up. Yeah.
They're building him well. This is a good next step up.
Yeah.
So that's your last pick then.
We've done the main event.
Wicked.
Very good.
All right.
Nice. And don't forget, if you want to get on the Manscaped wagon, go get on the site, and they are here in the UK now. Lightsaber. Oh,
it can't cross streams. It's the Manscaped rule.
And if you put Full Reptile in at the checkout, you will get 20% and free shipping. Get on board. They are dominating the game, really, aren't they?
Hashtag Danscaped.
Danscaped. Like cool. It. There you go.
All right.
Right.
Thanks for watching. Catch you next time.